please pull up a seat and wind down. Was your sojourn on Rockanjima a pleasant one? The Witch of Theatre Going has invited you to a tea party. We hope you choose to attend.
Welcome to a hidden tea party. My name is Courtney, and I am the Witch of Video Games, and these are my guests.
My name's Jess. My pronouns are they, them. Hello. I don't have a thing for you today. I'm too newly awake.
hi, my name's Rowan. My pronouns are they, them. I've been awake for, like, I'd say 1:33. Peep behind the curtain, we're recording at 1:33 p.m.
You're giving them extra lore.
And now you're listening to me do maths. I've been awake for, I would say sort of 5-6 hours at this point.
Interesting. I've been awake for 1,000 years, for I am golden witch of video games.
Wait, this is a good point. Do witches sleep? Like, are they allowed
to go
to bed?
They're not shown to sleep. Maybe they don't need it.
They can.
It's implied they don't really need to eat either. So.
They do eat and drink, but yeah, do they need to? Witches poop.
Now they're women.
I assume
so.
Not.
No, women don't poop
unless they want to.
Well,
you just mean like, oh, you know what? I'm just gonna go for a luxury shit, right? Now.
Well, I don't know. Some people take pleasure in that kind of thing. Not me though. I'm not them.
not the lore I wanted to discuss this episode.
You couldn't have said something that sounded so insincere. I love that.
I want it on the record. I did that on purpose. I was thinking, yeah, like, I think the witches eat food because it brings them joy to do so. So I reckon witches sleep, but only because they want to sleep. No, they don't have to, but they're like, nah, it's fun.
Time to clock out.
Good for them, honestly.
Bedtime hours.
Write in if you're Ryukishio 7 and you have a canon answer for this question. Otherwise, I don't want to fucking hear from you.
I'm not sure Ryukishi would write to us after the things we've said about him on this
also,
podcast.
Also, if you're Ryukishi, do you think you could give me your, like, location, national insurance number, date of birth, credit card number?
Please don't fight Ryukishio 7.
I'm not going to fight Ryukishio 7 unless it's in the Battle of the Mind.
Okay.
Like a rap battle.
Epic rap battles of history, Rowan versus Ryukishi.
Ryukishi versus a hater.
Known hater. Rowan... surname.
Rowan podcast.
Rowan's podcast. I just have a different number. I'm like Rowan 09.
Oh.
I love that. Rowan 2003.
Why 2003?
I don't know when you were born.
No.
Never mind then.
I was actually born in 2014. Thank you very much.
Get you. I was born 1,000 years ago.
I can't do maths.
Anyway.
If you were born in 2014, how old would that make you?
9.
Yeah.
Was
we're just having a podcast with an 8-year-old.
No, I'm 9. I'm old enough to be employed by the Yusoromiya family.
But only if Genji says it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Genji's really the...
Genji is apparently the gatekeeper on this.
You're nearly old enough to be purred on by George.
We don't know how long Yunki goes.
Oh boy, George in this reading is insufferable.
Yeah.
For both, like, explicit and implied reasons.
Is George in this reading? I didn't think George was in this reading.
One of us has read the reading really recently, and one of us has read the reading... moderately recently, and the other one has read the reading about
I know, George is in this reading, just not for very long.
Yeah, we had some brief appearances. Anyway, speaking of reading, this is what we read this week. We read from chapter 13, A New Element, to chapter 15, Sprout of Love, Root of Love.
Mm.
We begin with Shannon having a very specific dream about where she is in the Golden Land with Beatrice.
And Beatrice's like, hey, have you ever considered that dress goes spinny? Have you ever thought about drinking lots of soy milk?
This is Beatrice, the Claire Beatrice, by the way, just so that we're clear. There are so many.
Yeah.
I would like to, following on from last week and Rowan talking about inner worlds and the Golden Land. I'll be like, oh, this is their, this is, because Shannon doesn't recognise Claire. So this is the two altars, they're meeting each other, they're having a little tea party, they're communicating for the first time, it's great.
Yeah.
Have a little chat in their shared space.
Basically, Claire Trice offers Shannon the wonderful world of witches, with all the magic and fun that it entails. But Shannon turns it down and says that she would rather remain in the human world for reasons, specifically the same reason as to why Claire Trice needs Shannon to join her world.
And I was like, oh, it's human interaction.
Basically.
Claire's really upset about this. Claire's like, I cannot believe, like, I can provide everything. Like, what could you possibly want?
Why would you turn this down ever?
I'm also curious because if you see this from a DID perspective, and Shannon was like, yeah, I'm gonna stay in our shared world with you, Claire Trice. Who the fuck does that leave in the body?
I was gonna say, like, is this Claire being like, I want to front, get out?
I read it as, I don't want either of us to front. Let's just chill back here. And so I was like, because I wasn't sure originally when the whole Sayo turning in, like, Sayo creating Claire Trice thing happened. I wasn't sure if it was like, whether it was like Sayo was like, I'm going to step back and Claire's going to take the night, Shannon's got the day, I need a rest. It kind of seems like in this that actually Sayo's just turned into Claire. Like, and Sayo doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that would be, if this actually happened, whether Sayo would be shoved back into host or whether there's just kind of nothing.
So my interpretation of this scene stems from a reading of the Golden Land as what happens after all the deaths are carried out. So I wasn't sure if this was about contemplating taking their own life.
Oh, that's interesting. Ooh. Yeah.
That's my reading on this
scene. I can definitely see that, just being like, you don't want a part of the servant world. Like, I mean, it might even be, you could probably read that from a DID perspective as well, as two parts being like, actually, you know what, let's end it for all of us. Like,
yeah,
because no one wants to be the servant. No one wants the everyday life. Yeah, that's an interesting and dark interpretation.
It's very dark read on it, yeah.
But yeah, I can definitely see that.
As we know, even though the only thing that goes against this reading is that they're quite young at the time. They're only about, so this is about 10.
Yeah.
They think they're 10, they're actually 13.
I mean, I don't know if there's like a thing that's like, oh, that's too, is there any studies on like, if you're young enough, you don't consider suicide?
You certainly, not for me, I would like to point out, but I've certainly experienced someone at age 7 contemplating suicide. So I presume fairly young.
Sayo is young enough to feel that way. 13 is, like, plenty old enough.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of, 13-year-olds walking around.
Yeah, I guess it's probably about what age you can conceptualize what death is and what that means. Sayo seems to know that, at least.
Yes, I'd say so. Well, you know, they're quite well read, so I'm sure it's quite well educated as well.
I'm also quite interested as well in the, if you see this from a DID reading, like the, like one of the really, like, I'm not sure, I couldn't say whether this is true for all systems, but like, I think most people with a dissociative disorder have a, like, a young part who's like, this is the bit that's stuck in the trauma time. And I feel like that would be Sayo, and they appear to be gone. And I'm like, interesting, what have you done with them? Like, yeah. Where did they go? You can't just delete a part. It doesn't work like that. Have you hidden them somewhere?
Well, they're Claire now, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm like, are they playing a part in a different way? Are they? Yeah, I don't know. It's because Claire doesn't seem like a child.
I was gonna say how much do alters evolve over time? Is it possible? Because
they can grow up, but that's usually the result of, like, therapy to help process the trauma, which I would not argue that any of that's happening here.
Yeah, if it is therapy, it's fucking weird
therapy. Yeah.
I don't know whether I would call it good therapy. But, yeah, no, I was going to say, because, like, if it's sort of, like, a freeze response to trauma, and it's, like, there is an alter that is sort of frozen at trauma time.
Yeah.
It would feel weird for them to have sort of matured in this way. It is. I wonder if, if Claire was to, say, mature into the Beato that we know and love, there is an interesting, like, vindictive childishness to Beato that I could see being like, this is an evolution of scared child has gone to mean child, in the way that we see Maria become mean.
Yeah, I'm interested to find out whether Sayo reappears at any point or not.
Stepping back, because, sorry, I'm just thinking about Maria for a second, because like, I know, if Maria is having regular or like intense contact with somebody who has dealt with trauma using DID and is not necessarily, like, perhaps hasn't, like, dealt with it in the most healthy way, if that makes any sense, it kind of, you begin to start to understand Maria's worldview as she's like, oh, well, I can do, like, witch fantasy stuff too.
Yeah, I think, like, certainly, like, interacting with somebody who has clearly got several different personalities happening, that you can see the switch between, I think would certainly kind of make a young person go, well, I could have that. Like, right. I can do that.
I know that, I've spoken sometimes about one of my friends who's dating somebody who has DID, and she has spoken before about being concerned because she spends a lot of time sort of like interacting with the inner world. Yeah. And she's like, this has a really interesting knock-on effect on me, because she's sort of like, not developing it, but like her sense of self is like weird because she spends a lot of time in someone else's inner world. And it would be interesting if Maria's undergoing the same thing, where she's like spending so much time hanging out with all of these different alters that actually, like, particularly for somebody who's young and impressionable, her sense of reality is like actually being warped by this, even in such a way as like, she's now like, oh, this is a way I'm dealing with the trauma that's happening to me.
Yeah, like, Beatrice is, like, Maria's closest friend. Slash only friend.
Hold on. Fucking Sakutaro slander over here. Mm-hmm. Jot this down. Sakutaro is Maria's closest friend. But after
he
that...
He is. Unfortunately, he... As much as she does talk to him a lot, he can't really do a lot to influence her worldview. True. Being a plushie, bless him.
Yeah. There is one plushie in my life that has definitely influenced my worldview. I don't know if you've seen... God, do you know Dunglescog, the IKEA bear?
Yeah, the really round one, the really big one.
Dunglescog has deeply influenced my worldview.
This is what Umineko needed. It needed Dunglescog.
Well, I thought we had that in Nanjo.
No, we didn't.
And then Nanjo decided to enable Kinzo.
Yeah, no. Our Dunglescog's a lot more chill. He just plays Guitar Hero and sits on the couch.
Everyone's like, Dunglescog, where do you get this game from? It hasn't been invented yet.
Incredible.
What's going on? what's going on in the book?
Tangent with me. I feel like that was a worthy little tangent to go on. I was interested in, like, yeah, has Sayo Shannon Beato system had an influence on Maria's?
Like, I think you can definitely make an argument that Maria also has DID and that they're made for each other. I just think that, like, she's so young and stuff that, like, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
And we don't get stuff from her perspective.
Yeah.
Apart from that bit in unless you read Sakutaro as a part, but I don't think she's really interacting with him as one.
No. But I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. I think there's something to be said about, like, people going through trauma being influenced by, like, people around them's coping mechanisms for trauma. I think that's one of the reasons why, like, self-harm is epidemic, is because, like, people see other people coping and will, like, do the same thing.
Like, ooh, maybe that will help.
Yeah. I'm not here to compare DID with self-harm. However, I wonder if there's a similar, like, oh, this person is dealing with this. I wonder if I can also fucking deal with this awful thing that's happening to me.
I don't know if Maria has quite that level of awareness, though, is the only thing, because I don't think Maria doesn't read it as a system, but reads it as a literal witch possession.
I don't know that that's necessary. I don't know that you have to be, like, fully aware of what you're doing. I feel like
I guess, but Maria's thought process definitely wouldn't be, this is how they're processing trauma.
Oh, God, no, yeah, you no. Know. But, like...
Yeah. Because Maria sees it as magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think most people would look at, like...
But I do think that Maria sees magic as a way of escaping from her own trauma. Which, whether or not she realises that that's kind of what Beatrice's also doing.
yes. Yeah. That's true.
Mm. So, we then cut to the family conference.
Yeah.
And so Claire Trichet is trying to work out what it is that Shannon's so interested in. Again, it's basically human interaction with the cousins, because Shannon gets to hang out with them because they're the same age, and Shannon's friends with Jessica. So standard family conference stuff. But yeah, then this going is, further...
This is early family conference stuff as well, from before when Battler left the family.
Yes, so this is from 6 years ago, before Battler left, and... Shannon actually has a very specific conversation with Battler, which might end up being
relevant.
Very influential.
Yeah. So it turns out Shannon and Battler bond over their love of mystery novels. I'm like,
Shannon, I'm another, like, oh, super God. Person who loves mystery novels.
Yeah,
motherfucker's so, coming out the woodwork. It's like when
well,
you.
Well, we knew this last week.
We knew Sayo did. Shannon stares it. Battler also, like, I didn't know, because we knew that Battler liked mystery novels from his, like, conversations with Erica, but it wasn't really clear when he started to like those. I think it's really funny that Battler's had a real interest in mystery novels this whole time and just kind of doesn't think about it for, like, a good 3 episodes or so. he's busy being traumatized. Well, give him that. But
yeah, and Battler talks about the themes of Uma and Echo, basically, and talks about the why done it
yeah.
of the crime
and how it's neglected.
And how, yes, and how the heart of the crime is the most important. How the best mysteries have a heart and aren't just a homicidal maniac carrying out random murders.
Yeah.
I've compared Will to Ange before, but I'm fully like, this would have been... The Will should be Ange, in my opinion. Much as I love our, like, grumpy little detective boy, he should be Ange. And, yeah, this was like, this would have been so cute if Battler had said this, and then Ange was also following this principle later on. Like, that would have been a cute little circle. Waiting for the Will, Ange, Battler reveal. The red streak in that fucking hair is there for a reason, I guess.
I see.
Crackpot theory. They're all related.
God. It's also interesting in this flashback, like, we get, like, it's all very, like, there's a big splash art and it's, like, a kind of hand-drawn looking view of Battler looking away and it's black and white and it's, like, it's just, like, it's really, like, sincere and heartfelt and, like, the narration's implying that they both love each other and stuff. And I'm like, okay, how romanticized is this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the way it's presented really captures this sense of romanticization.
Yeah. Like, we're seeing it from Shannon's eyes. It's really, like, she's so into him.
Yeah. And he says that... If she quits her job, he'll come to her on a white horse
and take her away,
carry her away.
And this is so it's interesting as well because, like, obviously it's hard to say exactly how verbatim what he actually said was, but like he says, like he wants to rescue her. He'll ride her away on a white horse to live with him once she decides she's done being a servant. Basically so they can keep having chats like this because they keep, like, abandoning the other cousins to go talk about mystery novels together and they're like, oh, yeah, it's my favourite time or whatever. But he also says, like, you know, wait until you're ready. I'll respect whatever you decide and stuff. And I was like, honestly, this shows up George so much. Because yeah. This fucking 12-year-old is dealing with the concept of having a relationship with their own servant in a much more respectful way than George does.
Yep.
Jeez. Yeah. I don't know.
I think
it does make sense why. Yeah. Why this so was a thing that got latched onto so much because this is like the first person who's shown them respect. Jeez.
We do know that, like, the cousins were sort of aware of this conversation happening because it is brought up in episode 3.
Yeah.
And basically Battler writes it off as, oh, well, when I was a kid, I used to say this sort of embarrassing stuff all the time.
Yeah, and it's really, like, it's interesting how this is presented as well because it's not just that he says that and Shannon goes, okay. Like, that's not the end of the conversation. Shannon, like... thinks about it and is like, I'm not ready to leave now. Let's next year when you come to the conference, I'll have made a decision and then we can decide what to do. And she makes him promise like 3 times that he'll come for her and they'll have that conversation. And that he'll take her away if they both still want that. And it's like, and he says, like, I'll wait for you as long as you want me to, and, like, stuff like that. Like, it's all very, like, explicit promises and stuff like that. Like, it's not treated as a throwaway thing at all. And like, from how it's presented, it sounds like he like does actually mean it all seriously. And so I'm like, okay, like, from regardless of what Battler actually said, like, I am really seeing how this affected Shannon now.
Right. It's like, well, something like this did occur because Battler and the other cousins have sort of like confirmed that, but like, did it occur in this
capacity? Yeah. But yeah, like, because this is how she interpreted it anyway, like, and the fact that he not only doesn't remember it happening, but then dismisses it when she brings it up in 1986, I'm like, oof, oof.
Yeah.
It also, like, the whole conversation about the heart of mysteries and stuff, I feel like I understand a little bit more about what Shannon was doing as Beatrice, kind of giving Battler a load of closed rooms and murders and just like kind of prodding him and going, why would someone do this? Remember why, like think about it and realize why I would be doing this. And he just doesn't get it. And that's so sad. Yeah.
It is really tragic.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember all the shit I said when I was 12. I really do not blame Battler for not remembering.
I don't, in the sense, like, I would blame Battler for not remembering any of this if this is exactly what he said.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it is.
No, even from just sort of like a neurological standpoint, the more times you think about something and recall it, the more impure the memory gets, right? Because every time you recall it, you are likely to change details. So if this is something that, like...
We do know that he definitely said he would come for her on the white horse.
But whether he said, like, I think if he just said that, like, then this all makes more sense. It's all of the promises and stuff after that and the kind of clarifications and things that, like, give it credence, I think, in a way that...
Yeah, I don't blame Sayo for, like, fucking focusing on this. No,
like, this was the way out. This was the way into a future. Right. This was even having someone, like...
A throwaway comment, I think, that's, on Battler's behalf.
It's a difficult one as well because, like, Shannon was bonding with somebody who shared an interest with them and they both enjoyed talking to each other, and Shannon's never experienced that with anyone before.
Not anyone her own age.
No. So I think, and not anyone that could conceivably be attracted to her. So I think, like, she doesn't know what love looks like. I completely understand how, like, she could read into this more than was actually there, because she's like, well, people don't talk to me unless they really like me. Like, why would he be speaking to me? Because nobody else does. Which is so sad, but...
Yeah, it is a grim vision of Shannon's life. I'm gonna jump in and say a Rowan thing here and be like, would this have changed too much if these people were, you know, 5-10 years older? Actually, maybe it would have been even more influential, because like, a fucking 22-year-old can make promises that I feel like you can hold them to 9 years later, if that's the case. Whereas like a fucking 12-year-old, like, if you're 12 and listening to this, firstly, go away. Go back to, like, watching In the Night Garden or something. This is, why are you still
not in
here?
The Night Garden?
If you're 12. Secondly, if someone says shit to you and they are, like, also 12, don't kill a bunch of people over it. 12-year-olds will just sort of say stuff because they're still exploring the world and what they believe and what is true. Like, no. I feel like... Yeah.
I mean, so you're assuming, this is just some assumptions being made here, that the killings weren't going to happen anyway.
I don't know.
I think it's less about the act of killing itself and more the way they did the killing. Because for all we know, they could have just blown up the island and not done any of this murder mystery bullshit.
It depends. I think the thing that hinges on that for me is that there's a red truth that says that this tragedy wouldn't have happened if Battler didn't return to the island. And I guess whether that means this specific tragedy wouldn't have happened, but a different one would have, or no tragedy would have happened if he didn't come back, is what's getting me there.
Would it have been a tragedy if, like, you know...
I think you could call it a tragedy if an entire island of people were just blown up.
even if those people are the Ishiromians, yeah. It's still tragic.
Would Sire have seen it as a tragedy if it's killing all the people that they hate?
I'm unwilling to be like, does blank see it as blank as a red truth? I'm gonna put a line down here. I feel like, does blank see it as blank? It means that a bunch of people could be like, Kinzo is in this room now. And it's like, well, no, those mysteries hinder on, like, the specific wording of everybody acknowledged Kinzo. And, like, yes, I think that's bullshit. But if we go all the way down to, like, Red Truth is a perspective thing, we'll never get out. So I'm
going to... Yeah, I feel like Red Truth are at least supposed to be mostly objective.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, All we get is that because of your sin, people die.
So here's the thing, because I'm like, so the thing that I'm thinking is my prediction for the rest of how this is going to unfold is this is an important part of, like, Shannon's psychological development, where it's like fixating on this way out. We've seen how, like, interactions with people have had, like, these incredible knock-on effects that people haven't realized. My prediction is that fixating over this promise that Battler has made is one of the things that will form Bea Torice as we know her. So, like, even if Battler didn't return, even if, like, none of this shit has gone down, I feel like this moment is still influential in creating the person we know in 1986 who does the murders or blows up the island or whatever. Like, that person is still deeply influenced by this moment, and I don't know whether I can extract non-Battler-fueled murder rampage from the psychological impact of this conversation with Battler, you know?
We'll see when we do more of the reading.
Yeah. I just feel like this is such an important moment for Beato in general. It's like, well, the Beato we have would not be the same without it, no?
Yeah.
Is it enough to stop her killing all the Ushiromias? Wouldn't be enough to stop me killing them. I'd kill them now.
However. Yeah.
I mean, even Leon seems to be having trouble with it. We sort of cut to everyone and back in the chapel. Shikanan has been given the form of Claire temporarily.
Yeah, who's been given the form of Claire?
The culprit.
Right. Okay.
You know, them.
Yeah, I wasn't... I thought that Claire showed up and then Burncastle gifted her own form to her temporarily, which made no sense at all.
No, it's the form given to cover up
who the culprit is, in case you hadn't worked it out.
Which is so funny because it's like, well, count who's fucking missing.
I think at this point you probably worked it out, but I think it's also partially so we don't have to see a sprite of specifically Sayo, not as Shannon or Canon.
Yeah.
Wait, we're gonna get more fucking sprites?
There isn't a sprite of... It doesn't exist. He never made one.
Okay, because I had just assumed that either Shannon or Canon was the actual appearance, or they were, like, changing. I hadn't considered that there was a third.
The only The only time we've seen kind of close to their actual appearance is in the manga.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of. And to be fair, they look a bit like Shannon, but with hair over their face. It's my interpretation of that.
I have a question. Does this person have tits?
That's an interesting question.
It's an important aspect of Shannon's character design that Canon very influentially does not have.
Okay, I'm going to say this.
Where's the boob law, Courtney?
Kind of spoilers, but I don't care. Whatever. Sue me. Sayo is not drawn with breasts.
Interesting. Okay. Because this is relatively helpful for some of the, like, transgender implications that I sort of, like, stuck my foot in my mouth with previously and have determined to continue doing so for as long as possible. That's all.
Yeah, what I'm really intrigued about in this is how the other sermons are perceiving this person. Yeah. Because, like, I don't know to what extent Shannon is how they see themselves. Or whether, like, for instance, like, we kind of assume we're going to get a Canon at some point, like, how much of switching between Shannon and Canon involves actual costume changes and how much of it is just a perception thing? Because it could be that nobody actually, like, that they just look the same the whole time.
I will say, as Shannon, they are perceived as female.
Mm, okay.
Which is why they have such a specific kind of friendship with Jessica.
Mm.
Because I had understood this to be, like, if we're going with a trans interpretation, I'd just be like, yeah, some days I do look in the mirror and I, like, see fucking dual gender man. And some days I do look in the mirror and I see fucking breasted boobily Shannon, you know? And it's like, well, it would make sense if this is, like, a narrative being told to us by Sayo, if this is just, like, the different ways that Sayo sees themselves when they look in the mirror. How bad the dysphoria is that day, like,
They present differently enough for on the actual event of the incident, people still believe that Shannon and Canon are different people.
Okay.
So the Yushirobe family truly believe that there are two separate people called Shannon and Canon that are, like...
Yes.
I think, yeah, the servants... must not. The servants must know.
The servants are probably aware.
Because the two are
schedules
together.
Are organized in such a way that they're never on at the same time, basically.
When does this bitch sleep?
I'm not sure they do. That's maybe part of the problem.
Persisting entirely on monster energy drinks and hate.
Mm. Although, I think, to be fair, like, we get a lot of the servant interactions around the family conference day where, like,
they're
busiest and they're doing, like, double shifts so that they're awake overnight and stuff, which I don't think actually, like, I don't think there'd be any need for them to be awake overnight ever, really, on any other day.
Particularly because there appears to be normally enough servants to go around. Like, it feels... I think we're told at some point that they're operating on a skeleton crew because of Kinzo's wishes.
Which is interesting because, as we know, Kinzo isn't there. And we later find out it's because Natsuhi only wants the servants that she trusts the most not to let anything slip.
Ooh, crack theory. Sayo's poisoned Kinzo. Kinzo died abruptly because not actually because he was going to actually die, but because of, like, extra influence from Sayo in order to, like, begin the event.
I'm also thinking back to, do you remember last episode when we had that moment where Canon was reminiscing about all of the servants and people and was like, oh, Kinzo actually wasn't that bad when he was alone. He, like, taught me to shoot and stuff. And I was like, This implies a level of interaction between those two that we've never seen. Like, what did their relationship end up like? Because, like, it's at this point when we're seeing the flashback, like, we've not heard, like, Sayo or Shannon interacting with Kinzo at all. But it's possible they did form some kind of relationship, and what would that do? And also, did Shannon find out who they were at any point? Because I think if you found out that the guy you were working for was actually your granddad and everything that had gone on, you'd be pretty pissed.
And your dad.
Yeah, your granddad and your dad. Ugh.
Not letting that one slip. No, yeah. Sadly, this does mean that in the fiction, Genji is right. If canon's telling the truth about that, Genji is right. That there was some that Kinzo did show a preference for Sayo eventually.
Potentially, we might find out in this flashback at some point.
Yeah, if that's true,
we still
that's
have
really
some
cringe.
Flashback left. I will say.
I would like. No textual confirmation that Genji did the right thing.
Yeah.
That is a thing I am now demanding of Umineko.
Well, here's the thing. You have to remember, Genji doing this did lead to him dying.
And it also doesn't exonerate, it doesn't let him off the hook for anything that happened previously that he could have helped with.
No.
But Genji did kind of dig his own grave by doing this.
So, yeah. We'll see. We'll see.
Because this person on the island would end up killing him.
Yeah.
Rightly.
So, I don't know how much more consequences you can get.
No, Ooh, this does mean that this person has something, like, really neat that they can fucking blackmail a bunch of the servants with.
If they find, yeah. Them
to cooperate.
I feel like they have to have found out at some point. I don't know how.
You have to remember, as we know, in Red, Beatrice already has the gold.
There's a fucking little note near it that's like, BT dub. I don't know how that have like finding the gold would mean that you would.
I guess I'd always read that as like, you know, the witch Beatrice, like separate to the actual culprit, Beatrice. I'd always kind of assumed that Beatrice has the gold kind of meant Kinzo has it. But I guess
but
if
Kinzo's
you're
dead and it's not the motive. Like, basically, we've ruled out the motive that the gold is something that they're looking for.
Yeah.
Because they already have it.
Yeah, Sayo's the fucking riddle, goes up to Kinzo's like, I've solved the riddle because I'm like Erica Ferrudo and I've read 100 mystery novels and this is simple as shit, actually.
And he's like, I'm not fucking giving my thing to a servant.
Yeah, or he's like, okay, well, you can now be like, we'll now elevate you to a higher thing and we'll figure out what to do with this. Here, I'll come and teach you how to shoot. Oh, ho, ho, this is going to be so funny when my fucking...
When Kraut's fans
find
about it.
Out. We'll wait for the next family conference, shall we? And Sai's like, no chance, you're going.
I mean, it does, like, literally in this, this is the point of the book where Will says to Claire, like, your true moment of misfortune was solving the epitaph. And I was like, Rowan, you knew it. You were right. Shannon solved the epitaph. You've been saying that for ages.
Precognition. what was the thing I was gonna say? Shooting Kinzo, epitaph solving, Kraus. Nah, it's gone.
But it also, like, having solved the epitaph, like, you get a lot of people, if you tell someone you've solved the epitaph and you know where the gold is, that gives you a lot of leverage over somebody. If they want a bit of it.
It means Kinzo's fucking right, though.
What?
It means that the epitaph has worked because Kinzo's actual fucking child solved it. Not like fucking Kumasawa, who has read fucking mystery books. Not Nanjo, who's read a bunch of mystery books. No, no, no. Kinzo's actual child was the one that fucking solved it.
I think we should save this line of talk for next episode. I think we are missing some key bits of information.
Oh, should we? Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I think this might be explored in more detail later.
Yeah, because they do kind of say like, oh, yeah, the epitaph, you solved that, didn't you? Anyway, and then they just kind of move back into the flashback.
Explore Akishi's intestines in more detail later.
Yeah.
Well, said the chapter, the first chapter of the next reading is called Journey to the Golden Land. And the chapter after is called The Day the Witch Revived.
I can't wait for everything that I've ever said in Epitaph Corner to become true, is all that I'm
saying. It's a fucking...
Like, they went there to fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
River in Italy. I don't know.
Anyway, back to the reading. So the news has dropped that Battler has left the family.
Yes.
Back in this flashback.
In 1980. Yeah, because Rudolph's turned up at the island by himself and he's like, Battler's gone.
Natsu, he seems especially pissed.
She's like, she's ripping into him. It's quite good.
Deserved.
Yeah.
Kraus is a bit more sympathetic because he sucks. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, I think it was kind of implied before, but it really explicitly says, like, Rudolph had to marry Kyrie really quickly after his actual wife died because she was pregnant, and the timing meant that, like, he was definitely cheating on his wife. And he also admits that he was cheating throughout his whole marriage as well. because he's terrible. I also think, though, in this, we get to see a rant from Battler that he says to his dad about it all, and that's like when he was left. And I think it's surprisingly mature for somebody who is 12. Because, like, you know, he says all of the stuff like, you betrayed mom, blah blah blah, like, I hate you. But he also kind of says like to his dad like, oh, you better make sure that that kid lives really well and is supported by two parents because the child's blameless. And that he also says like, oh, I'd have supported you having a relationship with somebody after your mom if it hadn't been for the cheating. And I was like, I think those two things, like, I wouldn't necessarily blame a 12-year-old for not being considered either of those things and just being angry no matter what. But yeah, he's being surprisingly reasonable about it. But unfortunately, Rudolph is just too nasty to be dealt with at this point. So he's off.
It's sort of implied that Asuma's parents like kind of stoked this on more.
Yeah, because that's who Battler's been staying with. And that makes sense as well.
And that they really don't like Rudolph. Yeah, for obvious reasons.
Understandably.
Yeah.
Rudolph, meanwhile, is like, oh, I guess I'm going to hell. And I was like, you should have thought about that earlier, mate, I'm afraid. There's nothing you can do anymore.
So naturally, Shannon's upset by this.
Yeah.
But in their dreams, they return to the Golden Land where Claire Triche and as of yet unnamed Gap try to comfort them and basically say, oh, you don't worry about it. He's going to come. Everyone's just blowing this out of proportion. There's no way he'd forget about you.
They put into Shannon's head this whole idea that the next year is a trial and that all Shannon has to do is trust Battle will be back. And that if she trusts him enough, then he will be. And Shannon's at least somewhat, like, aware that that's just completely misguided optimism, which, you know, good for them. But still kind of goes with it and takes this and goes, yeah, all I need to do is trust him. It's weird, like, Claire and Gap, they go into all of this stuff as well, being about, like, oh, you have to be really determined if you actually want to leave the island, because, like, not only do you have to quit being a servant, you'd have to then move back to the mainland, go back to the orphanage, get a job so that you could get an apartment and all of this stuff, and then are you going to marry him? And they're, like, trying to force Shannon to consider the future a lot. Really stoking a fire that's unfortunately we know is just kind of not going to come to anything, which is unfortunate. I feel it's like the desperate attempt to like comfort somebody, but it's ended up being kind of just very
yeah. It's a fucking weird one. I don't know. I don't know what the right response at this point in time would be, because like, meh.
But yeah, those two have decided that he's definitely going to come back, and so Shannon kind of takes their word for it a bit on that one, and decides that okay, we're not going to be sad about it. We're just going to trust him and wait a year, and then it will all be better.
Because, like, George and Jessica are like, nah, he's not coming back. And they're, like, trying to explain. But, like, they do it in such a weird way. Like, George fucking sucks. And it's like, oh, no, when people grow up, they just leave the nest and never come back. And I'm like, okay.
So I have some George theories this episode.
Okay.
This is... sort of reading between the lines. I don't know if there's ever actually been any canon confirmation, because for all I know, I've read someone who's read some side material that says this is canon. So sorry if this is actually canon. George, I think, has an agenda here, because George has stated that he knew that Shannon liked Battler.
And he fancied Battler.
He
fancied
Shannon,
yeah. And he said he fancied Battler.
I can imagine here he has an agenda to try and get them to stop thinking about Battler.
Yeah.
By going, oh, he's not coming back. Oh, he's moved on. Anyway, I'm here.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about me?
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. And the fact that George looks at how old does he think Shannon is at this point? 13, maybe? he looks at a 13-year-old while he's 18.
No, 11.
11.
Is yes, 18? 11.
And he's 18. And is like, fantastic. The guy that she fancied is off, so it's time to manipulate the... is so...
That's
so... grim.
God.
I think it's partially, like, if you wanted to do a slightly more sympathetic reading of George, which I don't really, but I will say it anyway, because I think the two could still actually sit next to each other. I think George also kind of desperately wants to have flown the nest. He wants to be brave enough to, like, kind of get rid of his family and be successful by himself, but he's not able to, because he's just not very good at anything.
You're reminding me of last night. I was hanging out with a friend, and we were talking about somebody in their life who's kind of acting horribly at the moment, and I was like, well, if we were to, you know, with love it cannot be seen, give them my cyst interpretation, which is like something I feel we often do on this pod, and I was like, oh shit, human echo brain again.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is interesting. There is a loving interpretation of George's actions here, but I'm not interested in it.
Yeah, well, it's very Umin Echo to do that, where you can interpret George's actions in any way you
want. Yeah, I also think that you can totally think that George wishes he'd got out there, but is like, fantastic, now at least now I've got the opportunity to manipulate Shannon. Like, I think you can also read both at the same time. So, Yes. By the way, Shannon at this point, absolutely not noticing George at all. I would like to point out.
Yeah, good for fucking her.
Oh, this is 19... this is, yeah, so like 1981, Battle is not there.
Yes.
And she's like, oh... She's weirdly calm about it because she's like, oh, this is still a trial because I don't apparently fully trust him yet and I hadn't even done the paperwork to leave my position, which means that he won't come back until I trust him enough. And I was like, oh, God, you're really setting yourself up for some terrible feelings with that mentality.
So the conversation they had happened in 19...
The conversation who had?
Battler and Sayo had.
1980.
So wasn't a sin that was committed 9 years ago. Was it a sin that's committed 6 years ago? Six years ago. Okay, that's fine. Don't know where I got fucking 1950 from. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, no. No, it's just the sin from 6 years ago because Battler did it when he was 12 and then 6 years later he's 18.
Yeah.
Okay. I think a lot of my problems with this hinge around Ryukishi not being brave enough to make all of his main characters like fucking late 20s, early 30s.
But also I think part of Umineko is about the kind of uncertainty of adolescence.
Mm.
And I think you'd lose that if you aged up the characters.
I think, yeah, it's about the uncertainty of adolescence and it's about being forced to live with your parents as well. Least the, you know, Battler, Jessica, George's situations anyway.
I'm gonna just agree to disagree here. I don't know.
Also, you have to remember, Ryukishi is writing what he knows. He was 18 in 1986. That's the reason why it's set in 1986.
I'm gonna agree to disagree. I feel like this, a lot of the issues I have with this book would be milder if he wasn't dedicated to having fucking like teenage protagonists. That can be said of a lot of pieces of fiction for what it's worth. Why do we always make protagonists teenagers? Like, Jesus.
I don't know. I've consumed a lot of media where the protagonists aren't teenagers, but I think this is a story that partially works. Not quite on the level of Higurashi, where Higurashi completely crumbles if you do it with adults. But I think there is still an element of the coming to terms with your role in society, what society expects of you, especially on a gendered level in Umineko.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with the ages of the characters. I just wish that all of the, I'm putting this in scare quotes, lighthearted jokes and the kind of weird kind of, yeah, sexual jokes and all of that kind of stuff was just not there because I'm like, you don't get both.
That wouldn't be okay at any age either, so we're
it's
all good.
It's even worse when it's kids.
Anyway, Burncastle's like, this is pretty pathetic. She's like, Claire's like, oh, I was waiting for year after year after year, and Burncastle's like, pretty pathetic, don't you think? After all, this is a promise that Battler knew nothing about, right? And I'm like, person you hate makes a point you agree with. I'm really sorry to Claire, but like, geez.
I mean, are we gonna criticize again? This is like, are we gonna criticize an 11-year-old for this?
That's why I want her to be fucking 22, so I can criticize her. God damn it!
No, but like, that's why the story works because of this. You know,
they'll be mad, it's a tragedy. Mean to children. Ugh.
It's very tragic, you know, because the way this pans out is because of these exact set of circumstances.
Yeah. It's because of the isolation and the
Confusion around growing up, because the next scene we get is a very teenage scene of Jessica and one of the other servants who's Mammon but in a hat.
Yeah. Again.
Talking about, you boys. Know, girls and getting boyfriends, and they specifically bring up this idea of, you know, these girls who read into what boys say too much and how pathetic they are.
Yeah, and which... Shannon, like, doubts for a second and then goes, no, 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 I'm trusting Battler. And I'm like, Shannon, babe, you're getting so many signs from the people around you. But unfortunately, because Shannon believes in the trial, that's enough to ignore anything else.
A point I will make here, Jessica tickles Shannon. Which I think is something we've seen reversed elsewhere. So this is like, this is a relation, like this is a dynamic that Shannon has established as being okay first, and then Jessica has established as being okay first, and then Shannon's copying it back when they were like play fighting earlier. I don't know.
It's kind of sweet, because it's kind of normal.
Yeah.
In a way that the rest of Shannon Sayo's life just isn't.
Yeah, and I think again this is where I kind of think that the teenage aspects of the characters work best, because this is the exact kind of conversation you have when you're trying to work out your dynamics in a gendered society where there are two sets of expectations. None of the characters have any experience of this, nor would they be expected to, and they're trying to decode it and what it means and coming up with these very stock ideas of how the world works. Yeah,
girls do this, boys do that.
And I probably going to go into this more in later episodes, and because this is the part of Umineko I find really interesting. But I do think a lot of the tragedy of Sayo as a character comes from them having to interact with gendered expectations.
Working out exactly what's going on with Sayo's gender will help contextualize that for me. But yeah, there's certainly...
Yeah, that's why it's hard for me to go into it now, because he's still got quite a bit more to go through.
There's certainly a lot of expectations from different places there. I think Claire says to Shannon at one point when they're in the Golden Land chatting about all of this, like, oh, you're really good as a servant now, that's practice for marriage. Like... Because Claire's like, you'll be taking on the part of woman who cooks and cleans. And yeah, it's all just, yeah.
For the audio listeners, I was making gun in mouth gestures.
But yeah, I also think this whole idea of the life being a trial, life being a test thing, I think religion has something to say, has something to answer for here as well. Because at first it starts off just being like, this is a test, this is a trial. But at some point, can't remember exactly where it is, Shannon definitely just says it's God's test.
Interesting that we get here confirmed that Shannon's a Catholic.
Don't do this to me. Don't do this. Rowan knows what they're doing.
We've had this conversation.
This is because this is a bit of a translation thing, because in Japan you can refer to Shinto gods in the same way you'd refer to a singular god because of how plurality works. So this isn't necessarily
Christianity.
Shannon Christian confirmed.
But it is Shannon religion confirmed. And
yes, Shannon has this idea of a deity presenting this trial.
I do think that makes sense because I think, yeah, it was established that the orphanage director in the orphanage believed in angels and demons and had some kind of religion as well, and was talking to Sayo about it. So that's fairly formative. I feel like if Shannon picked that up, it makes sense that, you know, I don't think they've been given any other religious ideas from any other sources. So it makes sense they might believe in that as well. There's this concept that if Shannon just does the right thing, that will be enough for Battler to come back, and that he doesn't actually have any agency in this whatsoever. It's all about Shannon's actions.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because that's a way to give Shannon control, which, you know, Sayo, Shannon, they've never had control over anything in their whole lives. But it's also ignoring reality.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then every bad thing that happens and everything that, like, someone might look at and go, this is clearly a sign that he's not coming back. Shan's just like, no, this is just the trial getting harder. This means I have to believe more than I did before, rather than less.
Which could result in an interesting spiral. Can't think of any other point in this book where, you know, a deity or demon of some kind has presented a trial of love.
Interesting.
Can't think of any of those.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting.
Can't think who the participants were.
Mm, yeah. I mean, Shannon was definitely not there.
No.
And yeah, we get to 1982. Battler's also not there.
Yes.
So, and again, Jessica and definitely George start stoking the flames a bit more.
Yeah, it's like 1982. I think it's like no one even mentions him really. Until Shannon brings him up. And there's this really interesting bit where Shannon says, like, that they feel like they're the only person keeping Battler alive because everyone else has forgotten him so much that he's been erased from existence. And I'm like, okay, this is really important to this whole character's worldview, I feel like, that someone only really exists when they're remembered and they're acknowledged. Because that's a lot about how they're dealing with how the whole Beatrice thing is presented as well. And I feel like I'm not exactly sure how that all connects up, but I'm like, I feel like that's a clue. That's how Shannon sees people.
Yeah, for sure.
So we then cut to 1983.
Yeah.
The year later, and Kyrie has brought letters from Battler.
Yeah, he's still not there. Kyrie did visit him as well. So Kyrie's seen him recently.
Yeah. There's letters for George, Jessica, Maria, Anja. But when Sayo asks George for the letter for her, he just assumes that she's going to dispose of the envelope.
Yeah, she says, like, oh, are there any more? And George is like, oh, no, and gives her the empty envelope because he's, like, assuming she's being a good servant who's just cleaning up after them.
If I want to be very mean to George here, I could go, George hid the letter.
Ooh.
Battler did write a letter and George hid it. Because George is in a position
he
where...
He was holding the... He was giving them out.
Yeah.
That's super interesting. I hadn't even considered that. And he totally... I believe that he would have. He had the capability to. Whether he actually, like... He had the capability to, whether he, like, would have done that in every... if he'd seen the letter in every circumstance. I don't think he would have in every... In everyone. But he definitely could have.
Yeah. And this kind of whole situation, regardless, sends Shannon off the deep end.
Yeah.
And we find out that Battler's sin was that he just didn't remember.
Yeah.
Even if that's what upset Shannon the most, was not that Battler broke the promise. It would have been better if Battler broke the promise, but at least remembered breaking it.
Yeah, I think they talk about how, like, it wasn't even really a broken promise because it wasn't really ever a proper promise to begin with.
Yeah.
Which is when it really, really, the narrative really starts to cast doubt on exactly what the words were that he was said earlier. Because he definitely did promise several times in what we saw. And so I don't know whether this is saying, yes, he said those words, but he didn't mean it, or whether it was kind of, that's not really how the conversation went down, that's just how Shannon saw it. Which is really sad, and Claire feels terrible, because she's just there like, I just spent 3 years encouraging Shannon. Over something that was completely wrong. I'm like, yeah, you did. You did.
And as a to make it up to Shannon, Claire reconstructs the universe.
Yeah.
You know, a very reasonable thing to go to go.
So if I was going to say this was DID, I would say that the trauma of heartbreak caused a split. And
yeah.
And we're getting a new alter because of it. And similarly, I don't think I didn't really fully conceptualize this earlier, but like I think probably Gap Triche may have been caused by the trauma of the servants bullying Sayo.
Yeah,
as like true, an answer actually. To being called worthless and losing stuff all the time, being like, no, actually it was this person who I've just made. But yeah,
so
some pivotal moments these new characters are appearing at, certainly.
Interesting little PS3 sprite detail. We keep getting shots of this like bed in night time that the narration is happening over.
Yeah, like it's Sayo's bedroom, isn't it?
Yeah. And at the end of this, we get the bedroom in the morning and it's all lit up now and you can see that the bedding is pink.
Yeah, the bed is pink, yes. Yeah.
Which, don't know what that means!
I think you could read into that about how the people who set the bed up, who was presumably not Sayo, read Sayo. I think, for instance, like, you could... If in the manga, Sayo isn't shown having boobs, I mean, you don't develop boobs until you're a bit older. It could just be that they were too young. And that the Shannon persona really took over when they started to, like, develop. I don't know. I think you could read this various ways.
I will say that Shannon is Sayo's actual servant name. It's a bit harder to tell in English, but the characters in Sayo are used to make Shannon as a name using the on ending.
Okay. So it's possible / probable that the servants wouldn't have noticed a switch between Sayo and Shannon because they're just a kind of continuation.
Because
they were always calling them Shannon, yeah.
So during this universe reconstruction, Claire Triche persona decides to take on the love for Battler, to compartmentalize it into themselves. Mm. And thus changes their form to something more pleasing to Battler. Blonde with huge boobs.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, so this is... We don't actually see a sprite, but I'm like, I'm presuming this is when, like...
We get a shot of the episode 2 Beatrice portrait with, like, the suit, not with the dress. Mm. So that's kind of...
I'm like, okay,
What they go for.
I'm like, okay, so this is her, and then later on they probably gave her that fancy dress because that was what was in the portrait that hasn't yet been put up in the hallway.
Yes. And also they're going to give, to help Shannon cope, give a new servant will arrive and it will be a sort of younger brother.
Someone
figure.
To love in place of Butler. Yeah, it was interesting. They decide this boy will also be from the orphanage. Because Shannon was. Mm. He'll be quiet and calm, but he will also be a servant of Kinzo. I'm like, well, because Shannon is, so he also has to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I'm like, okay, so this is how we end up with three different personalities all loving different people then. Is Claire, because I was wondering throughout this, being like, at what point does, like... Because, like, Shannon's love for Battler really doesn't disappear. But I'm like, at what point does Shannon turn into loving George? So this is how, apparently.
if we're going with the DID interpretation, this is pretty, fair enough as far as I can tell. My friend who's dating a system is, like, dating some of the alters and not all of them. So I could see how, like, some alters would be dating certain people, like... This doesn't feel too far out for our interpretation. It feels like an extreme version of it, but you know, what about Umineko isn't the extreme version?
Yeah, like, I could totally see, like, you know, the love for Battler being so painful and stuff is being split off. The fact that it's being given to a an altar that already exists rather than a new one, I'm like, I don't think that's a problem. I'm not sure.
No. No.
And then, Canon's being created, I guess, as a kind of another protector, like a kind of a friend, someone to talk to.
The Shannon we see on 1986 Rock and Jima has a lot of the sort of like playful, childish, clumsy elements of that person, whereas like Canon's definitely the like more reserved, careful side.
I'm really interested as well in how this ends up developing in terms of like does this system enjoy being Canon more than Shannon? Is this system being created? Is Canon a boy because the whole system's like actually trans time?
Right.
Is Canon a boy because of something to do with gender expectations and being able to escape from being perceived as a woman, less because of trans stuff and more because of something else? I don't know. I don't know. If it's a trans, if this split as well is motivated by trans stuff, like, is why is the Shannon being kept and Canon not being the primary personality? Like, there's a lot of questions I have, and like,
I know gender stuff is different if you're like, you've got different alters, because different alters can have different relationships with gender, and like, that becomes a whole ass thing. But where before the DID interpretation, and like maybe setting that aside for a moment, I had taken this as a narrative of somebody who was like trans femme and was like, that's why all of the like created selves are like women and like very high femme women as well, was because I was like, oh, this is sort of what this person dreams of them being. And I'd seen Canon as quite a like a sad, withdrawn, like boy moding essentially, of particularly because like Canon is like rejecting the dream and rejecting love and like refusing to see it. I'm like, I had always seen that as like, oh, Canon's the part that like decides to stay in the closet. I don't know how well that's gonna hold up, but that's kind of why that had been my read, which is kind of why I'd been asking about boobs, because I was just like, OMG, how fast can estrogen work?
And like, there's certainly something to be said about if the family are perceiving this as two different people, like, you could breastplate into Shannon fairly easily, but you could not bind Shannon's boobs like that.
No, exactly.
Whether or not, I don't know whether that would be something that would be taken into account based on the fact it's an anime game and stuff, but... Canon magic binder, I am, like, could still be a thing, I don't know.
The only thing that's gonna fucking convince me of witches is that motherfucker being able to bind those things down.
Gaps, jeez. Like, I got you, I'm just gonna put those into the portal dimension for you.
Incredible.
I'll keep them.
Not that it's okay to talk about anybody's body this way, but there is a weird sharpness to the idea that they've been joking about, like, essentially a trans man's boobs in the way that Battler fucking talks about Shannon's body all the time. Like, there is a weird, like, probably quite personal disgust that I feel about that idea. And that, I think that's one of the reasons I've been, like, so hypervigilant on it, because I'm like...
I guess what the thing is, though, it's not like Battler knows he's doing that.
No, It's fine. Like, the Battler is exactly the same level of condemned that he was already. I'm very keen on finding more reasons to dislike Ryukishi.
I'm not sure what's going on with gender stuff here, but there's something.
I just wanted to be clear as to, like, why I'm so preoccupied with it.
Okay.
It is, you know.
Is this just a Rowan disclaimer? I'm like, you're like, I'm preoccupied with tits, but like, not in a weird way.
Yeah, I'm not weird about it, I say.
I suppose you could also read that as like, one of the big problem that Shannon has had here is that she has massively misread the intentions and like, of a boy. So I don't know whether, like, you could probably read this as like, okay, here's a part, he's a boy. This is going to be our attempt to understand a man. We are going to give you a boy to talk to so that you understand boys now, even though, this is our interpretation of what a boy would be like, probably also based on expectations and all sorts, but.
Alternatively, if canon is like functioning in the household as a boy, like you might be able to like witness a bit of boy talk.
That's true.
Because like, people say shit. Very recently, I was hanging out with a group of people, and they started doing boy talk around me, and I was like both disgusted and affirmed. It was like,
horrible.
I was like, why the fuck are you saying this? But also like, thanks for.
Like, you'll be like, you feel safe saying this around me? You feel safe saying this around me?
Right. It was a whole time. But yeah, no, maybe that's the real goal here, is to just sort of like hear some boy talk.
Yeah.
So now that we're wrapping up this reading.
Yeah.
This is the last chance for any epitaph theories. Next episode, we will be delving into the epitaph solution.
I desperately wanted this game. If this is not my biggest beef with Umen Echo, I'm sure. Like, I'm sure there'll be others, because I haven't got to the end yet. But so far, my biggest beef with Umen Echo is that they didn't give me enough epitaph clues that I personally understood before the reveal.
It is a hard thing to work out.
It's
not impossible, but I would have been surprised.
The problem is that I would feel better about it if Adam hadn't done it.
I don't know. If to be fair, once you can go back and listen to that Adam episode, you'll know that like he shouldn't have worked it out.
I'm fully willing to believe that my man just like memed his way into the fucking thing.
I wanted to meme my way into it, Rowan.
Well. It's tough to be like us, you know? We do bits, they come into reality. The lathe of hating Umen Echo.
So, any final epitaph notes?
I got nothing.
Cook
like,
a meatball.
Cook... No! We no! Unless it's to do with the theory.
That's my final epitaph.
We have extracted as much as we can. The rest is up to you. Before you begin.
You've milked me dry of epitaph theories.
Next week's reading is chapter 16, Journey to the Golden Land, and chapter 17, The Day the Witch Revived.
How many chapters do we have left in this episode?
Three.
Okay.
We are so close, lads.
And we have tea parties.
We are so close, lads. God.
Next episode, you will either see me vindicated because I got quite a lot of things right, or absolutely fucking furious.
Punished Jess.
I will say, I have no idea whether this version of the game is going to give the English solvable version or it's going to use the Japanese version. So if it does the Japanese version, I'll be sure to provide the lines from the English solvable version.
I think it's not the English solvable version, as far as I remember what I've seen in the game so far. But we'll be discussing the English solvable version.
Yes, we'll do that. I'll make sure you guys have all the dialogue for that. So
if this is actually about numbers, I'm gonna flip the fuck out.
The next reading is a very interesting one, and Once again, people who have read Oom and Echo before, you'll notice through this episode, I probably said more than I should have.
What, this episode?
But it's so hard at this point, yeah. But, you know...
I'm sus. I don't know what's going on.
We're finally getting to the real good stuff in Oom and Echo, and I'm having such a good time.
I'm going to have to re-listen to this.
I'm going to listen to this for him.
Yeah.
I'm actually going back. I've decided one thing I would like to do is go back to some of our really early episodes and see if I can find if I did actually say my fucking Kinzo Kuwadorian theory or whether I kept that to myself like a fucking idiot.
I do know that there were a lot of canon jokes, so
yeah, I've been onto this shit since day one, and I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing.
That said, it does add another meaning to the phrase gender trench.
It does.
Anyway,
what a beautiful
god.
Right, well, follow our social media. It's all in the description, especially the Tumblr.
Social media, so singular.
Well, I'm including my Twitter, which is basically an arm of my social media.
Very recently, I got 2 follows on my like main Twitter, which is the one that we have linked. And one person was someone who definitely found me through the podcast, and one was my coworker, because I live life on the fucking edge.
The duality of Rowan.
Fear.
Yeah. If don't follow me.
Too late.
Should I take your Twitter off?
Too late. It's been on there for like fucking... It's been on there for like 35 episodes. You can't say don't follow me now.
don't follow me. Don't follow me, brackets kayfabe. That's what I was going for. It's like, I hate you all, and this is a bad book, and I'm having a horrible time hanging out with my friends.
Brackets, tee hee.
Yeah. Sorry.
Speaking of having a horrible time... We'll all see you next week for some more Oom and Echo shenanigans.
I'm gonna be yelling. I don't know what about yet, but I will be.
Incredible.
You sure will. Right, well, thank you and good night.
Bye.